to the official podcast of FCS Fans Nation with your hosts, Kyler Neal, Matthew Frazee, and Jamie Williams.
FCS Fans Nation. A beatdown of the Bison and Brookins, a Bobcat Blitzkrieg in Cheney, Washington, and a bunch of playoff hopes were murdered this past weekend. And might I say, this is pretty typical for the 2021 FCS fall season. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the FCS Fans Nation podcast. Your joyous, so happy host, the unbiased and biased admin, Matt Frazee, joined with Jamie Williams, Kyler Neal. We are all doing great tonight, especially Jamie, who has the only victorious team, NFL and college, amongst this podcast. Kyler Neal's Packers and Eagles getting beat, my Bison and Cowboys getting beat, Jamie's Bills going down, but his Dukes get a win. Jamie, shine some positive light on this podcast before we kick off, because you're the only one with it, my man.
It's 1 week of the regular season. All of our teams are going to the playoffs. Relax. It'll be fine.
R-E-L-A-X. And pulling an Aaron Rodgers there.
Relax. I couldn't do that. That term's on COVID this week.
out of the game. Just like some people are out of the playoffs. And we're going to break that down tonight, guys. So FCS Fans Nation podcast ran by the FCS Fans Nation page on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, all those social media platforms. And we're going to kick right into it, guys. Kind of have a theme of this Big Seven. A lot of people are really starting to get interested into seeding conversation. And of course, a lot of the big upsets, which could have affected that. So that's going to lead us into our fun for the evening as we roll into the Big Seven.
The top seven FCS topics of the week. This is the Big Seven.
Alrighty, gentlemen. The thing is, we had a lot of questions, and it was kind of nice because a lot of them were on similar themes. So I'm going to give some multiple shout-outs as we hit our Big Seven here. And we are going to start right off the top with a lot of people are thinking, man, playoff seeds have to have some implications from this last weekend. So Mr. Hall Jones, Mr. Andy Holland, and Matthew Olson, all with a variety of questions. Mr. Hall Jones wondering about what the heck these top eight seeds are going to look like in 2 weeks from now. Some follow-on questions from Andy. He's curious about the battle for that second seed. Matthew Olson was like, is that Montana State's to lose? But if you had to rank James Madison, NDSU, and Montana State behind Sam Houston, how would you do that in a seeding order? And of course, how does South Dakota State look with all this chaos from the last weekend of them defeating the Bison down in Brookings? So looking at the seeds and looking at where we're at, guys, Kyler, what's this shaping up for you, man? There's a lot of options out there, aren't there?
Yeah, and no, I actually do think what Hall's saying is probably accurate. It is Montana State's to lose at this point. At the end of the day, if they win out, they're 10-1. 10-0 versus the FCS. They're going to have two top 10 wins. That's pretty insane to have. I mean, when you're comparing that to a North Dakota State, when you're comparing that to a James Madison, each of them will have an FCS loss. Also, they have only losses to the top 10 that they've played this season. So, I mean, when you're looking at it like that, it is Montana State's to lose. Now, if they go in and they lose to Montana, 100% the two seed goes to James Madison, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, one of these other schools. But if Montana State can win out, I think it's a lock for the two seed.
Yeah, it's going to be, if we just go down the line here a little bit, we're showing it on YouTube, a dated records list should update tomorrow. But Sam Houston is at 8-0, and they undoubtedly will be the one seed as long as they finish undefeated. I think, yeah, James Madison has to be in line with that two seed at this point just because of so many teams that lost if Montana State loses, right? So that's some of the questions people on our page and others were debating. They're like, what? Big Sky, Montana State, didn't they get blown out in 2019? But just based off that resume, it's one FBS loss versus one FCS loss for James Madison. I think that's a really easy call for the committee to make. Jamie, do you agree, or do you think it's not so cut and dry and James Madison could have a look into that too with a 10-1 record?
If Montana State wins out, the only way I can explain James Madison being the 2 seed would be to be an absolute homer. I can't do that. That's not going to be what I could do. Because if Montana State wins out, they're undefeated against the FCS. That's going to trump any team with a loss, no matter how high ranked the team that they lost to is, because Villanova and South Dakota State are both probably going to sneak back into the top 5 or 6. And that's going to look good for James Madison. It's going to look good for North Dakota State. But I do think those are your top 4 seeds. So right now, obviously, there's still 2 weeks to go and things can happen. I mean, heck, Montana State could lose to Idaho. No, they can't. They might lose to Montana though. So sorry, Chris, but I mean, James Madison plays William & Mary this week. I know they laid an absolute egg against Delaware, but I think they got caught looking ahead to their last 2 games, which are huge rivals. NDSU still has South Dakota, which is a dangerous team. Everybody's going to pick North Dakota State, but that's still a dangerous team. So, yeah, I do think it's Montana State to lose, and then JMU and North Dakota State, however that falls out the rest of the way. I think those are your top 4 in some fashion.
So if nobody loses, tell me if I'm wrong here, or kind of correct me if it gets a little weary. Sam Houston, Montana State, right now inside track, North Dakota State, South Dakota State, James Madison. Those right there, right now, if they just keep winning, that's probably your top 5 seeds. Now you could debate the 5 there, but coming in behind them, Southern Illinois losing is out of this conversation. UC Davis, if they beat Eastern, obviously with only 1 loss, they're certainly in this conversation. ETSU down there, ranked number 14 currently in stats. This is on Sunday. If they finish undefeated, they'll be 10-1 with just a loss to what could be Chattanooga auto bid. I was tweeting about that earlier. Kennesaw State, they could finish with 1 loss. Villanova, FBS loss, and then they had beat JMU and 1 slip up. Do you guys think that 6-7-8 range gets really confusing, or if nobody were to lose, or do you see somewhere you're just like, it's a guarantee? To me, ETSU feels like a safe lock for a seed if they went out. I don't know about like a Kennesaw versus a Villanova though. What do you think on that? Cut or dry or no?
I think those are the teams that you'll be looking at, but you don't know what this committee is going to value. And, we can talk about what the committee's done in the past, but I believe there are 7 new members of the committee this year. So what those folks value may be a little different. I mean, if Montana wins out, they could potentially jump back into the seeds. Kennesaw is going to have, if they win out, they're going to have a win over a decent Monmouth team, but it's not going to be a ranked win. So they're going to be that team that I'm wondering probably gets left out, kind of like James Madison did in 2018, although we had losses. And Kennesaw will just have the 1. But yeah, I do think that if East Tennessee State wins out, it's going to be hard to keep them out of the seeds. It might be 7 or 8, but I mean, the way this week fell, there was a lot of losses that teams looking to secure their seeds lost, and teams looking to secure playoff spots put themselves on the bubble. So I think we've got a long way to go.
So, Kyler, let me ask you this. This would be my question here. Let's say Montana State loses, right? And we'll say Sam Houston is the number 1. And we'll say NDSU and JMU finished. They roll the rest of the way out. No. Let me switch this around. Montana State wins. They're undefeated, okay? They're going to be the 2 seed. And then NDSU and James Madison, who's the 3, who's the 4 there? Like how 10-1 NDSU, 10-1 James Madison, Kyler, who are you going to flip there? Who are you going to decide? Where do they go?
I think the committee would give it to North Dakota State on that one. And at the end of the day, who cares? You're both, at home in the quarters. But I just find it hard to believe that when you're looking at James Madison's schedule, they're going to win the games that they're supposed to. But North Dakota's strength of schedule, if they win out the rest of the way versus if James Madison wins out the rest of the way, it's still going to be a little bit tougher. And the committee does value similar resumes. They do value strength of schedule. So I think right there, North Dakota State would get the 3. James Madison would probably get the 4. But, at the end of the day, those are like whenever it's a 1-2, 3-4, 5-6, 7-8 argument, who cares? Like, you're still getting the right home game. You're still going to have to play one of these teams if you want to be a national championship anyway. But I do think the committee would lean towards North Dakota State. And then just to kind of backtrack a little bit to yours and Jamie's conversation about the rest of the seeds, you still have, like you mentioned, UC Davis. Also, what happens if UC Davis loses to Eastern, loses to Sac State? There's still two other teams who could potentially get a 7-8 seed. Like, Eastern's still not out of it. They'd have to win out. They'd have to beat UC Davis. And there's a potential bubble seed that even if they win out, they may not get it. But then you have to look at Sac State. The last time they lost was way back in September to UNI, and they have been kind of rolling ever since. They look a little iffy on some aspects. But if they go 8-0 in the Big Sky, that's probably good enough to get them some type of seed, even though they have a weaker schedule. So I think Kennesaw, ETSU, UC Davis, Sac State, Eastern Washington, Montana, MSU, those are all on the bubbles on who's going to potentially get one of those, you know, seeds outside of a Sam Houston, James Madison, South Dakota State, North Dakota State. It's a little bit of a clutter, but I think those are kind of all of your seed competitors if they're winning out or doing something like that right now.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
I just want to add one more quick little.
Oh, go ahead, Jamie.
So I wanted to add one more quick little thing. You know, we talk about where North Dakota State might wind up with just the one loss. And after losing this week, how clutch does that call that Matt Entz made to go from Quincy Patterson to Cam Miller look in the fourth quarter against Missouri State? Because North Dakota State was about to lose that game, and we wouldn't be talking about them in the top four right now. So Matt Entz coming up roses again. I know he gets a lot of heat for certain reasons that North Dakota State fans would explain, but seems like he comes up roses when he makes a call to me.
Yeah, it will be very interesting. And I guess I asked hypothetical, but if Montana State does lose to Montana, it's going to be Sam Houston. And then it's going to be between James Madison and NDSU. And why is that important? Because that is the difference between Bridgeforth or Fargo in the semis.
Yeah. Ooh,
and I got to tell you, that prediction on who wins that game could very well just be based off of home field advantage. That is going to be huge if Montana State does not get the two.
Yep.
So, and you could argue you might want to, who knows? There's too many hypotheticals, but I'm just saying that that's going to be crazy if that's how it plays out. So we'll have to see. Be very interesting. We'll get more to some more seed talk here, guys, as we hit our quick hit questions. But yeah, lots to be determined. Shameless plug time. Next week, we're not going to be asking for fan questions. We will be doing one of our most fun episodes, the second year tradition of our mock playoff bracket. So we will predict all of the last week big games that matter for people getting in and out. And then we will place the seeds and place teams in and out and act like we are the committee. So it's a really fun episode. Make sure you subscribe on YouTube because it's a lot of fun to watch. So if you're into NFL mock drafts and things like that, next week's episode will be for you. So, all right, guys, moving into some more playoff questions away from those seeds a little bit. Really good one here. Mr. Adam Peterson said, how much does the loss to my Illinois State Redbirds hurt you and I's playoff hopes? And on top of that, Mr. Adam Willie wants to know, what does the University of South Dakota have to do to make the playoffs? So, Jamie, what does that do for you and I? And what are some other teams you're looking at, like your Weavers and others, that may be completely out of this? Or do they still have a shot at this point?
Weavers definitely done. Northern Iowa, if they win out, and it's not going to be an easy task, Missouri State and Western Illinois, I still think they get in. But if they lose even to Missouri State, Northern Iowa's done. You just can't lose that game you lost yesterday. And get in. That won't work. South Dakota is another one of those bubble teams. And is it going to come down to them having to beat North Dakota State? Because it very well could. They did beat Northern Iowa. Sorry, I'm pulling up their schedule real quick. But they lost to Missouri State. And they don't really have another key win out there. So they almost have to beat. Oh wow, they play South Dakota State this week too in the rivalry game, so it's gonna be pretty hard for them. But I mean, if they pick up some wins, if they pick up two wins, they're definitely in. One, they're still a bubble and probably out. Other teams that are potentially out, and it breaks my heart to say it, but VMI is probably, unfortunately, out after losing to ETSU because that loss to the Citadel, unfortunately, looks like an albatross. So if Chattanooga wins out, they're the SoCon champion, I believe. Depends on their game with Mercer, but that's down to a three-team race for two slots. I think East Tennessee State pretty well has one in hand. So VMI, unfortunately, out this week after a bad loss. Yeah, Weber's out. They lost to Portland State. How the heck that hack Joe DeLeon picked that, probably just being a hack, thinking he was being a hack, and reverse psychology there. So watch out Eastern. Yeah, I think those are two of the main teams that kind of knocked themselves off the bubble off the top of my head. Kyle, you got anybody else that kind of gone now?
No, I mean, I think most of the teams are still in the running. I think what you just said, Weber's chances were already slim to none because I don't think the Big Sky was going to get six teams anyway. They had a win out just to even be considered on the bubble, but I think they would have been last four or first four gone or something like that. They would have been still left out. Now there's no hope of them. You know, people are saying Portland State's chances are still alive. Even if they win out and beat Eastern Washington, all these teams, they'll go 7-4, but only six Division I wins. That's not going to get you in from the Big Sky. It just won't. Even though they'll go 6-2 versus the FCS because they had two FBS teams, so that's a little interesting. But, you know, for this UNI in South Dakota, really UNI has to win out. That's their only chance. If they drop one more, which, you know, looking at their schedule, they should win out. But if they drop one more, they're done. They're just completely done. South Dakota is the interesting one. I think because their out-of-conference schedule is pretty weak, right? They don't have really too many clutch wins besides Northern Iowa. Like, that is their only clutch win, in my opinion. And Northern Iowa might have just shot themselves in the foot if they can't win out. So maybe their clutch win is not against a playoff team. But if they go 1-1 in their next two games or somehow, you know, manage to beat South Dakota State and North Dakota State, then South Dakota's in. But if they go 0-2, it's going to be pretty hard for South Dakota to get in. And I do think they're probably going to go 0-2 in these last couple games. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think there's still going to be four teams coming out of the Valley, at least. And I think UNI is going to probably win out and still make the playoffs as kind of one of the last teams from the Valley. But everything else, what you said with VMI and stuff, not going to allude to anymore. I think you hit it right there. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I still think this next week is more important, and we're going to find out a lot more. Like, this is like the title – the playoff elimination week, the next 2 weeks. This one is just kind of, you're buttering your biscuit. You're getting ready. You're seeing the writings on the wall, but that writing could easily be erased. This next week, that's really going to prove a lot.
Yeah, and really good points. The next 2 weeks, we're going to get a lot more clarification. We lost a few this week. If you're watching on YouTube, you're seeing Southern Illinois schedule from 2019. The reason I pull that up is for Adam Willey's question. I feel like USD, unless they beat South Dakota State or North Dakota State, will fall right where Southern Illinois was, which everybody was like, what? Southern Illinois should have got in. Like, they were such a good team, yada, yada. But if you look in their 2019 schedule, very similar to where USD is now in the Valley. Beat one good quality team like you and I. Quality is now questionable. And the rest of it was against the bottom feeders, and they never beat the top tier ones in 2019, SIU. They never beat South Dakota State. They didn't beat North Dakota State. They weren't competitive in those games. So I think that's where USD is at. USD only makes the playoffs if they beat one of South Dakota State or North Dakota State. And I honestly don't see it happening. So they could get that same fate as what Southern Illinois did back in 2019. But we'll have to see how it plays out. We will get a lot more clarification and we'll mock it up next Saturday, boys. All right. To the big one, of course, the beloved NDSU Bison, only beloved to me. Go down in burning fashion in Brookings. In my opinion, the game is not as close as what the final score showed, as the Bison lose down in South Dakota State, second year in a row, losing that Dakota marker. And we have some questions here, mostly from some Bison fans. One Bison fan, Garrett Meyer, and Joshua Hoffman, a South Dakota State fan. But Garrett's kind of statement and sentiment here is he's wondering if there's been a sharp decline in discipline with North Dakota State. He understands they went 16-0 in 2019, but he feels like compared to Kleiman and under Coach Bull, the Bison have lost a discipline edge that they used to have a big advantage over teams before. And then Joshua Hoffman also says, how and why did NDSU play as sloppy as their fans criticized Jacksonville State for? So, ooh, solid jab there. Burn. But basically, this is kind of the breakdown of the Dakota Marker game, guys. And I guess I can take it first, which is, first off, credit to South Dakota State. Heck of a game plan. Played extremely well. They played a clean game. They knew their opponent, and they attacked NDSU in the exact way they knew how. You can blame, like, sloppiness of NDSU and penalties and ifs and buts, you know, if they were candies and nuts. But NDSU was not prepared, and that is a credit to South Dakota State. Better game plan, better coaching, showed up to that game the right way. Looks like they got their quarterback to make plays in better positions. NDSU stuck to its same old traditional Tyler Roll game plan offensively. South Dakota State knew it was coming. They knew how to counter it easy. And boy, South Dakota State pulled out all the tricks. And I kept hearing from Bison fans over and over again, like, this is everything they do. They just pull out this secret game plan against NDSU. You know, they don't do this against anybody else. Well, you know what? Maybe North Dakota State and Matt Entz better figure that out. Maybe it's time that they stop saying things like, we just treat it like another game. And maybe they should treat it like it's something different. Because that's, to me, sounds like creativity by South Dakota State and laziness on North Dakota State's part. So have they lost their discipline edge? If you're asking from a Bison fan, I'm not ready to say yes on that, because people quickly forget. But I heard that about Climbing all the time. And maybe we live in different camps, but I heard that about Climbing. Oh, it's not like Bull. Climbing, you know, he's letting these players be loose. It's not like Bull. So I'm not ready to completely throw in the towel on Ents and the discipline thing. But I will say that they are becoming viciously unprepared for top-tier rivals. And they just... the offensive execution is not good. Something's broken on the offensive side. So that's my long-winded North Dakota State take. Don't give up on the coaching staff quite yet, outside of maybe the offensive coordinator. And we'll have to see how the rest of it plays out. So, all right, gents, what did you think as you watched that game unfold? And what are your opinions of NDSU, who's looking still to be 10-1 entering the playoffs? Kyler, what do you got?
My thing is, right now, NDSU, the last however many years, has had one X factor that no one else is able to have. Best quarterback, best quarterback, best quarterback, best quarterback. Like, you can keep going down all of these years. They had something that was an X factor. Right now, Cam Miller, he's playing fine. He's doing a good job. I don't think he's an X factor player yet. He's got a lot of room to grow. And since those X factor quarterback players have left, right, Trey Lance, NDSU has played three top-tier talented teams, in my opinion. South Dakota State, Sam Houston, and then South Dakota State again. They're 0-3. They don't have that quarterback, in my opinion, who's going to completely be able to change the game. I mean, when you look at it, total yards, very even game. It wasn't a very even game when you watched it play. It was kind of like when Montana State and Eastern Washington. When you look at the scoreboard, you're like, such an even game. No, Montana State just absolutely throttled us, and I thought South Dakota State did the exact same thing to North Dakota State this last year. They don't have the X-factor quarterback who's going to be able to put 24 points, 26 points, 30 points on these top-tier talented defensive teams, very balanced teams. And again, it's just one game. North Dakota State always drops one game typically, besides a few of their undefeated seasons, so I wouldn't take this to heart. It's a rivalry game and something. But that is kind of the one thing I am noticing. It is just a little bit different. Like, Cam Miller, he did play phenomenal this last game. The difference is, phenomenal sometimes doesn't work when you aren't like that peak X factor player. I think Cam Miller is a stud quarterback. He's got a lot of room to grow, but there's just something about it that it doesn't scream he can maybe, you know, get to that next level, like a Trey Lance, like an Easton Stick, like a Carson Wentz that NDSU was able to rely on. When NDSU is down and you had those quarterbacks, put the ball in their hand. Let's see what they do. Cam Miller, I'm not sure if anyone has that type of faith in him yet when they're playing the top tier of the top tier. And again, he's going to beat every single other team outside of maybe the top three. So if that's your quarterback, it's still a pretty freaking solid quarterback. NDSU fans have just been a little bit spoiled with the success they've had in the last decade that no one else is ever going to recreate. But I just think they're missing that X factor right now.
Yeah, it's a very, very good point. And I will say this, I got to pat myself on the back. You guys didn't hear my prediction unless you listened to Jackrabbit Illustrated Splitting Hair podcast, which I saved. I picked SDSU to win. I picked SDSU to win 27-21. I was kind of upset that I was off by 2 points, but I had a two-part prediction on that episode. I said South Dakota State wins this game. NDSU going undefeated is too good to be true. But NDSU will be in a better position for the playoffs and make it further in the playoffs. That was my prediction. And I'm not going to deter from that. Like, I know Bison fans are upset and all these things, but this is like a flashback to 2017. In 2017, NDSU was number 2 in the nation, facing number 8 South Dakota State. South Dakota State had 2 losses. NDSU was 8-0, and South Dakota State beat them in Brookings. Fun fact, South Dakota State had their first drive, went for 75 yards in 2017, and they never trailed. And in 2021, the first drive went for 75 yards, and SDSU never trailed. So it's, to me, it feels almost like a repeat. Yes, Jackrabbits, you're really good. You could win the title, and I could be wrong, but it just, to me, there's your silver lining, is I thought this was bound to happen, but long-term, NDSU is in a better seeding position. So, Jamie, some final thoughts. We got quite a few quick hit questions on this topic, but what are your overall takeaways from the Bison and the Jackrabbits? And compliment to the Jackrabbits as well.
Yeah, so would we agree that 51 yards in the course of a game is a fairly significant chunk?
Overall 51, I don't know if it would be significant.
Okay, well, let's put it in this context. When you usually get 500 yards of offense and now you get 400, but you average 51 penalty yards a game, Does that set your offense back potentially? Does that set your defense back potentially? I think that's what people are potentially seeing, because they're still top 50 in the penalty yard. So, I mean, it's down near 50. So, 51 a game, that's a decent chunk, but when y'all were getting 500, 600 yards a game on offense, that's overcomable. When you're getting 400, that's not as overcomable. You're putting yourself behind the sticks, and so the scores are down a little bit. So I think that's why people are saying they've lost their discipline. That's not a terrible number, but in the course of a little bit regressed offense because of what Kyler said, without that X factor, you got to grind a little harder for those yards. So you need any yardage you give up in any way, whether it be a tackle for loss or a penalty, it's that much harder to scrap back. And maybe that's what people are seeing, but let's not fret over one game. It's a rivalry game on the road against a team that was fired up. That's also a really good team.
A very good team.
You're still going to the playoffs and you're still there. What's that?
Oh, I said, yeah, it's against South Dakota State, right? It's not like they had this trouble against some bum squad.
Right. So, yeah, I would just, again, hey, R-E-L-A-X.
Yeah, it's almost like everyone focuses on 2013, 2018, and the Trey Lance year, but forgets about all those other years where you had two losses, and NDSU still got to the semifinals or won a championship. So, yeah, things will overcome. In terms of other stuff, yeah, NDSU, with the next 2 weeks spring, I have a feeling nobody's going to care if they're 10-1 in a top 4 seed. So, all right, we'll have to see how it plays out, guys. Moving on away from kind of this big 3 talk and all these seeds and things, Mr. Jacob Martinez, an awesome Kennesaw Owls fan, he wants to know, what's your playoff ceiling for the quadruple option Owls with a seemingly legit passing threat? Quadruple option, guys, not just triple option. And I'm going to pull up Kennesaw State here if you guys are watching on YouTube. We're going to look at their playoff history. And what do you think, Jamie? You're likely to see them as a Dukes fan or somebody on the East Coast just because of geography and stuff, unless they end up seeded. Do you see them as a legitimate threat in the playoffs with the offense that they run?
I think that their ceiling is exactly what their ceiling has always shown: quarterfinals. You know, they can win a round, the first round if they're seeded. They can win a second round game. But when you get to play those top 8 teams, you're going to see better defenses. And it might take a little bit to come around, but those teams will eventually figure it out and beat you. I think that's it's a quarterfinal team at best. If you come to Bridgeforth, good luck, because we do stop the run. Give up some passing yards, as we saw, but you know, and that's just Bridgeforth. East Tennessee State, you play them, I think East Tennessee State beats Kennesaw. So, yeah, quarterfinals is probably their ceiling. I do like that they're incorporating a little bit more pass into their game, but it's still not a core competency for them. They still want to run the ball down your throat. And when it comes down to it, I think somebody's going to knock them out in the quarters.
Yeah, the interesting thing is, like, take out even the names of NDSU and James Madison, and if you were just, like, saying the top-tier teams that have had a lot of success and eventually got beat, they're beat by teams that can spread them out and attack them in a multitude of ways. And, you know, getting playmakers into open space, which suddenly opens up running opportunities, and that lockdown one-route sort of way. I understand, Jacob, they've improved the passing game a little bit, but it is kind of still on par with what we've seen in the past. And I don't know if this Kennesaw team is any better than what you saw in one of your best teams ever. If that 2018 team, I know you had a quarterback injury in the quarterfinals against South Dakota State, but would you have gone to the semis there and then won up in Fargo? I'm not convinced that that's going to happen either. So I would say a dream scenario is semis, but quarters is probably your best bet. Kyler, do you agree with us here, or do you think it's less or more?
All depends on matchups, right? I do think that is the key for how the playoffs look out. There's going to be some teams that match up definitely better versus others. So I definitely think it depends on matchups and how far Kennesaw can go. You know, I would say safe bet is to say probably quarterfinal, what everyone else is kind of alluding to. But it really depends on matchups. If you're somehow getting that lucky side of the bracket like Delaware was on last year, do I think Kennesaw could have probably, this type of team could have went as far as Delaware did last year in the semis? Yeah, I mean, it just literally depends on your matchups. Now, I get he just has a legit passing threat. They're still ranked bottom eight in the nation. They are passing a little bit better, but it's nothing drastic in order to change kind of the perception of Kennesaw. When you're still bottom eight in the nation, you're still bottom eight in the nation. There's nothing else to allude to besides, you know, you're playing a little bit better in the passing game than some of the worst teams in the FCS that are trying to throw the ball. You are at least throwing the ball a little bit better. But a lot of that's also because you're running so much. So people are just not aware. I think you still need to incorporate it more. I would love to see if Kennesaw is throwing 15 to 20 times a day while running that triple option. It could change things. You definitely need to get more into the passing option to really spread the field with that triple option. But yeah, quarters, unless you're getting some awesome section of the bracket to where you're getting teams that really struggle against stopping the run. If you can get that safe side of the bracket, maybe you're going to have a pretty good shot. Like if you get a Southeast Louisiana, even like an Eastern Washington, and maybe a couple other teams on your side of the bracket who do struggle with stopping the run a little bit, then maybe you can make it past the quarters. Still wouldn't bet on it, but it definitely depends on matchups.
Yeah, and to credit to Kennesaw on their past history, like they're a young program, but you're just looking at the results. They've never really been blown out, like when they get into these games. I mean, South Dakota State, they lose their starting quarterback in 2018. They still only lose by 10. Losing to 5 in Weber in 2019, that was a tough place to go for a very good defensive squad. So they are always prepared. They're well coached. I just think all three of us across the board have questions about that triple option.
But to be fair, also historically in the playoffs, the quarterfinals are normally pretty close games. Then you see the blowouts in the semis. I don't know why it is, but like if you look at the last, you know, portion of the history, all of the people in the title games, their toughest game was always in the quarters. It was not in the semis. The semis where you just get blown out. So that is the weird thing.
Yeah, it's really unique how the semis have become just an absolute slaughter fest. So turn off the TV early stuff. But we'll have to see how it plays out for you. Hopefully Kennesaw has a really good run because I think they're a really fun program. Love the mascot and the colors. So, Jacob, we hope to see your Owls have a lot of success, my man.
Love the colors.
Oh, I love them. I love them. The yellow and black.
That's such a pat on the back compliment. I just love the colors.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
They ripped off Georgia Tech.
No. Oh, no. Way prettier than Georgia Tech.
I like Kennesaw's look way better than Georgia Tech.
Yep. Georgia Tech uniforms only look cool when Calvin Johnson wore them. That was the only time in the history of mankind.
Yeah, I do like Kennesaw's yellow.
All right, boys. So if people are counting, we do have 7 questions, but I combine these two together. So this is 6/7. All right. Moving into our top 10 lists, we have questions here. Tim Rask and Seth Meyer. Tim, I don't know if we're going to be able to give you top 10 because I don't think it is even needed, my man. But we'll call it a top list for the current Peyton and Buchanan Award winners. And then the combined question here comes from Seth Meyer of Cole Kelly. Did he take the lead over Eric Berry III for the Walter Payton? Jamie, I'll start with you with the top one there because you are one of the stats voters, one of the guys. Talk to us here about who you think is in that final stages for the Payton and the Buchanan.
We'll start with the easy one because the Payton, everybody sees the flash stats. It's Cole Kelly, it's Eric Berrier, Pierre Strong, Tim DeMoret, because I'm a homer, Cole Johnson, Cameron Ward had a phenomenal game, probably thrust himself into that conversation. So there's some there. Buchanan's a little harder because, the defensive guys don't get the flash, but I'll throw some names out there. Isaiah Land, Florida A&M, Devontae Maxwell, Chattanooga, Nate Lynn, William & Mary, Justin Ford of Montana, seven interceptions there. I think he has like seven interceptions in seven games. Christian Benford. So there's some guys, and hey, because I want to be a homer again, Isaac Ukwu, James Madison, you asked me the question, I get to throw a couple of my guys in there. Did Cole Kelly take the lead over EB3? Maybe, but maybe Pierre Strong did.
Ooh, yes. Yeah, maybe we're going to get away from those quarterbacks. If you're on YouTube watching, you see Cooper Kupp, who is destroying the NFL, has your one wide receiver. The list on the screen goes to 2008, and then it's just all quarterbacks. But yeah, hey, maybe Pierre Strong's up there. And shout out to Jamie. If you're a stats voter and you don't know those names and have those stats and like can just think of that like that quick, you need to reevaluate and fix yourself because Jamie Williams, one of the best out there. I sent this agenda like right up against the start of this podcast and he's already got it down. So kudos to you, my man, for all that research. And Kyler, you were messaging us a little bit about how you do think Eric Berrier may have lost to Walter Payton. You want to expand on that thought a bit?
Well, I said it in last week's podcast, or maybe it was on the Friday night one. I don't remember which one I said, but I said, listen, it's a two-man race. It would be cool if a running back won it. You know, it's just not going to happen. This is a quarterback award. Let's just call it what it is. But I said over
the next... Let me have my clickbait.
Yeah, let's have a clickbait. But over the next few years, I mean, the defenses for Cole Kelly are horrible for passing defenses, where Eric Berrier had to play, at the time, number three passing defense in the nation. Then when he played then they went back to number 10. Then he just played the number three passing defense again. Eric Berrier's road was much tougher to end the season than Cole Kelly's, right? So what I said in the last podcast is, listen, it's a two-man race. Cole Kelly's going to start to pull away in this race because of the competition that they're playing against. It is night and day where Cole Kelly's playing against literally the bottom 15 defenses in the nation and passing defenses specifically, where Eric Berrier, they're playing against more of the top. So that is kind of the difference. So it just depends, like, are you only going to look at stats? Most of the time, that's what happens. But it was kind of cool. Trey Lance, outside of his, you know, crazy interceptions, how he didn't throw any, Trey Lance didn't have the best stats in 2019. He was on the best team. He had crazy passing efficiency, and he didn't throw an interception. And that's what won it for him. But it wasn't a gaudy stat line everywhere else, like total touchdowns, total yards. He wasn't the number one. So who knows what the committee will do.
And he wasn't in my top five.
And yeah, he wasn't even in Jamie's top five. So it is kind of confusing. Well,
I take back everything I said about Jamie. Sorry. Yeah. I'm going to go edit that out now.
Yeah. But it just depends on what the committee's seen. Are they going to say, all right, it's still a two-man race. Cole Kelly, you played McNeese twice, which is literally the second worst passing defense in the nation. And you did not play anyone really in the top 50, where Eric Berry played quite a bit. But yeah, I do think overall it's probably Cole Kelly's to win because I think in the last 3 weeks, it's really going to kind of step up. You know, even though he just lost, there was no defense in Incarnate Word versus Southeastern Louisiana. That was an old school shootout. Not one defensive player should be in any type of defensive categories for anything because like everyone was open. There wasn't, no one was getting pressure. It was just insane. Those are fun to watch. Eric Berry doesn't get in those types of really games too much. It's only happened really once all season where Cole Kelly, he's going to get in that all season. No one's playing defense against him, and he's a beast. So I think it's going to separate towards the end of the season where it's going to be undeniable when he has 750 more yards. Touchdowns are fairly even. He does have a higher accuracy percentage right now. But again, it is a little bit of the competition you're playing.
And that's why it's harder for me to just say, oh, yeah, look at this guy. He's heads and shoulders above everybody in these yardage, because I know what kind of schedule they're playing and I know what kind of defense they're playing. And it's not like the Big Sky is known for its defense, but the Big Sky does have some really strong defenses. But, you know, the Southland is
following the Valley.
Yeah, the Southland is the Big 12, just slinging around. And, you know, God bless Cole Kelly for taking advantage of it, because he still completes 73% of his passes. So it's not like he's throwing 100 times and completing 45 for 500 yards. So he's a very accurate thrower, and he's got the run game too. So it's not a bad thing to vote for Cole Kelly. To say my vote is solidified would be false. I'm going to watch the last couple of weeks and see how it plays out and how the teams fall out, because that's going to be kind of a tiebreaker for me, is how these guys finish the season, you know, with their teams. Do they go pick up wins and get a seed and roll into the playoffs on fire, or are they there in spite of themselves? So, you know, there's a long way to go. 2 weeks is a long time.
An educated voter right there, cautious, yet has his preparation down. So be interesting to see how it plays out. And yes, and don't get it twisted, we would all love to have Cole Kelly on our team, maybe outside of Kyler. So, or maybe that's just the Bison fan of me wanting some high-end quarterback play. Don't worry, I think Cam's going to be really good.
Wah.
He's going to be really good. He's young. He's up and coming. So, all right, boys, really good stuff. Kudos to you as well, Jamie. Again, great research. Looking forward to see how you vote there as the award season comes out. Rolling into our final question of the Big Seven, guys. This is big. Congratulations, Jamie, to you and your Dukes, to Brandon Owens and Bruce Edmiston, for Jacksonville State, for all of our good friends, Victor and Keith Hooper of Sam Houston. You guys are moving on to greener pastures. I know everyone will hate that term because it's FBS, but Sam Houston, Jacksonville State, James Madison officially going FBS. James Madison going to the Sun Belt. Sam Houston, Jacksonville State will be going to CUSA, new and revamped. So Mr. Keel Wilson, a Dukes fan, wants to know, name three teams that are most likely to take the place of JMU, Sam Houston, and Jacksonville State. This is very interesting. If I were to tell you guys, you can't use, obviously, NDSU and SDSU and Eastern Washington, we expect you really good. And if you can't use the Montanas, okay, I'm going to keep the Montanas out of this. Who are these three replacement teams you think could be almost year in, year out kind of squads? Kyler, you got one on your mind, my man?
I was going to say, I think Montana State's going to take place of the James Madison or South Dakota or Sam Houston State. But since you just said I can't use that, now I have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. I'm going to throw a really wild one out there if you want to have a second here.
Give me a second.
Furman?
What? Yeah, Furman. Yeah, my boys, the Paladins. Why can't New Hampshire come back? Why can't they come back into the fold? Do you think, Jamie, they've been a little – have they just been under the rug of James Madison, who took things away from them almost the way NDSU did to you and I? Or are they having deeper-seated issues there? That's an established program, you know? Are they just kind of semi in the dumps a little bit? They've got a long legacy of winning there. Am I off on that? Is, you know, coaching regime – why not New Hampshire?
Sean McDonald's a great coach. So glad to see him back this year after, you know, 19, where he had to unfortunately go fight cancer to see him back, but they just haven't had the quarterback play. But I mean, if you want to go to another CAA team, it's going to be Villanova that has more of the chance to be that consistent team that's always there. And they kind of always have been. They're the 2009 champion. Almost seamless transition from great coach Andy Talley, Hall of Fame level coach Andy Talley, to Mark Ferrante. Almost didn't miss a beat outside of having 462 injuries every year. John Robertson won the Jerry Rice and the Peyton Award, just like Cooper Kupp. You know, they've got that Daniel Smith now. So to me, Villanova is more that team from the CAA that could fill that vacuum. Sam Houston is that consistent team. Like, could that be Southeastern Louisiana? I know I'm trying to kind of stay in the same portion of the country there, taking it in that way. Team that has a lot of offense that could potentially start winning a bunch of conference titles in a row because, you know, not as challenged as some of the other schools, but win big when they need to, but get into the playoffs and can't, and then eventually maybe they turn it around too and find some defense. Jacksonville State, I mean, I know John Gross just stepped down, so I'm going to just take a quick minute there. I know it's what a lot of Gamecock fans wanted, but also appreciate what you had because he elevated that program to another level. You got to a national championship game, and I know the last few years haven't been what you wanted, and we've all joked on him. But overall, you should thank Gross for what he did. But who's going to be like that Jekyll and Hyde type of team? I mean, why couldn't it be Kennesaw State if they figure out a new passing game?
That's what I was thinking.
Perennial about. Playoff team, you know? I mean, perennial playoff team, solid, decent recruiting base. I know Atlanta's tough, but I mean, they stay FCS. So, you know, get some of those spillover guys.
How about that battle, Jamie? How about Kennesaw, NCA&T, right? Kind of, are they going to push each other? And I know NCA&T, they're having a little bit of a transition, but when you think about programs, and I know Kennesaw's young, but teams that just do things the right way, and then suddenly they can take an elevation with the right coaching hire, or, you know, why couldn't they step into that Jacksonville State seeding? Ooh, maybe are they going to be involved? Role NCA&T, Kennesaw. Kyler, have you had enough time, or are we kind of still taking all these teams away from you?
No, I mean, here's an interesting one though. Like UT Martin, you know, they are flying through the OVC right now. They're, you know, looking to take the title from the OVC and be undefeated, just like Jacksonville State did a lot. They're also one of these teams where it seems like they're also playing a little bit down to the level of competition sometimes. Then versus, you know, some good teams that you're probably thinking they shouldn't win, they're winning. Now they're getting all this national credit where, hey, who knows, if they continue to do this throughout the OVC, maybe they're going to be in the top 10 in preseason polls all the time and then probably still have a losing record in the playoffs. So, I mean, I didn't want to do a dig, but that's kind of my thought process. And right now, of course, it's just one season and UT Martin hasn't done it successfully for a long period of time to make you think that it's sustainable. But right now I'm just going to throw my hat and say, UT Martin, because right now they are the OVC Kings right now, for at least this season after Jacksonville State left right away. And they're playing some bad teams pretty close. Then they're also playing some teams you think that they shouldn't beat, and they're absolutely clobbering them. Or you think it should be close, and they're clobbering them, which is kind of that Jekyll and Hyde mentality when Jacksonville State was dominating the OVC. But they're probably still going to be a second-round team, quarterfinal team max, depending on, you know, who they get in the actual postseason. I just don't know who outside of the Montanas, to be fair, is going to take that James Madden or Sam Houston State role. Where you're looking at, these are two of the best four teams consistently throughout most of the decade in any given year. I just don't see it once you eliminate the teams you eliminated, who's going to be able to fill that. I see a lot of potential Jacksonville States out there. I don't see a lot of potential Sam Houston States and James Madison. It's going to happen, but I think it's on some of the teams you said we cannot pick.
Would we have said Weber if they hadn't had such a tough year this year? Wouldn't they be one of those teams you were potentially looking at to fill some of that gap? You don't think so?
Nope.
Four times in a row.
I think they would be in between a Jacksonville State and a Sam Houston, in that type of a sense. I just don't think they are built to beat some of the top teams in the nation. You know, offensively really struggling, defense they're really good, and it's just the Jay Hill motto. I don't see them beating a North Dakota State ever. I don't see them beating a James Madison ever, even when they're playing at their best. I don't see it. So I think they're in between them, but I don't think they can fill the role of that Sam Houston State where you're like every single year this is a potential semifinal team or title contender. James Madison, every single year it's a potential semifinal team or title contender. I just don't see that with Weber, even though they have been really good. They're more in between those two teams.
That's the real question. Sam Herter said in our podcast when he special guests, you know, who's going to invest in football? Are you going to lose teams that want to invest in the football program and build their athletics program around it, you know, instead of just being part of FCS football? And that's going to be a huge thing. Who are going to be those programs who do that? And then who can recruit to the point where the depth is just in and out. You know, I made a comment with a South Dakota State fan where I said, you know, NDSU is going to win a few more titles here in the next decade. And they said, oh, way to be cocky. And I said, you know, college football is, you can almost predict it. It's not the NFL draft. You know, the lower teams don't get to get a really good fresh start. It's, you can look at recruiting classes and almost predict the future. Can't predict natties, but you can predict good teams. So who's going to be that to just backfill over and over and over again? That's tough to do. You know, think about like Nichols. Nichols was in the conversation for 2 years and now Nichols suddenly gone. You know, like Kyler said, we may have a lot of those type of teams, but do we have any of these consistent ones? That will be the real question.
I think MSU and Montana are surprisingly it, and I hate saying it.
Well, that, I think that Coach Vegan hire is huge at Montana State too. You take a Craig Bull product and you're trying to get a person to take the next step to bring you into championship caliber play. The guy's got the experience, obviously. So, you know, that's a big hire. They're not messing around there in Montana State.
They invest in football like no one else. Both of the programs do, right? You know, maybe not like a James Madison or North Dakota State. Well, maybe Montana does for sure. They're building another facility. Montana State, they just opened brand new locker rooms. They're doing another expansion. Those are two programs. They are investing for the future, and it's going to pay off.
Yeah, and the Montana State coach said that after NDSU murdered them in 2019. He took flack for no reason for this, but he said, you know, we're at an unfair advantage because of what these guys put into their program. And it wasn't a call out to NDSU. It was a call out to the donors and to the program saying, we got to invest to get these people in here. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Keo, good luck to your Dukes and Jamie's Dukes as you guys move up to the next level. It was long overdue. You guys are in a really good situation. I wish all three fan bases and you guys luck as you go up into bowl games and, hey, maybe a 12-team playoff. So, all right, guys, that finishes us up here for our Big 7. And it's time. We've got quite a few here, so let's roll right into our quick hits.
Just because your question is answered quickly doesn't mean we don't care. These are the quick hit questions of the week.
Alrighty, guys, always my favorite segment, the quick hit questions, and let's kick it right away with this one here. I apologize, I don't have your name up here, but this is Charlie Seaman. I'll give you the shout out, my man, on YouTube. He wants to know, would you take Sam Houston, North Dakota State, and South Dakota State, or the field if you are betting on championship odds? Ooh, this one's good. Kyler, I'll start with you, man. This question's yours. You taking those three teams, or you taking the field?
I think they are three of the top six teams that have the best chance to win the national championship. So, you know, the field is a very sexy. I mean, there's a lot of teams in this field, especially this year, that can win it. I still think if I had to put actual money down, I have more faith in those three teams than I do in a majority of the other teams. So yeah, I'll actually take that. I'll bet on them versus the field.
Taking some of the three powers there. All right, Jamie, here we go. Peter Mooney, my man, tell me if I'm wrong. He wrote VU. That is Nova, correct, Jamie Williams? Perfect.
Yep.
So if Nova and James Madison went out, does Nova get seated ahead of James Madison?
I don't think so. You know, it's kind of funny, but, you know, they're going to both have 10 wins, I believe. No, Nova's probably going to have 9.
Yeah, Nova will have,
nine.
An FBS loss. And an FCS loss, yeah.
But it's going to sound funny, but James Madison's loss is better than Villanova's loss if they win out. I mean, as funny as that sounds, everything else isn't necessarily equal either. So I still think James Madison gets a seed over Villanova. But is it an intriguing question? And would I be surprised? A little bit, yeah. But could it be justified? Also, yeah.
Good, yep, it... Yeah, they could try to justify it, but yeah, I don't see it happening. I think James Madison, just because of the record there. If Villanova had won out, absolutely, but not in this scenario. I'll toss this one. Actually, I'll skip myself because I'm interested in your perspective here, Kyler. You just saw Montana State play right against your Eastern Washington Eagles. You know a lot about James Madison. Kevin Mandel wants to know, which team is more complete right now, Montana State or James Madison? Great question and tough pick. What do you think?
I think James Madison's offense is actually still better than Montana State's. But I think Montana State's defense is actually fantastic. They're probably the best defense that I've watched all year, like across the board. I think they're just, this is a cop-out answer. I think they're on par because I do think, you know, they have a lot of similarities, but I'm going to lean towards James Madison's offense just a little bit. And I'll actually lean towards Montana State's defense a little bit. They're massive. They're big boys. So I think cop-out answer. They're both equally complete.
Putting them on par. I would say something that's added on par, just as a small addition, correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, but young offensive line for the Dukes right now, but they've had a ton of running back injuries too. So James yeah. Madison has taken some dings. And Wells, or I think I'm saying his name right, Antoine Wells, right, Jamie? Or Walls, stud receiver you guys got, but I don't know if there's as many weapons on the outside as maybe they've had in the past. So it could be more comparable, so especially with those injuries. Correct, Jamie, or am I off on that?
Yeah, I mean, our running back room, thank goodness it was deep. I mean, Percy Ajay-Obashay out for the year. I mean, that's an all-time top running back at JMU, a top five guy. Kalon Black, freshman, was electric, out for the year. Austin Douglas missed last week. Lorenzo Bryant went down last week. That didn't look good. So we're down to Latrell Palmer, who kind of is a Marshawn Lynch kind of guy. And Solomon Van Horst, who kind of has that catch the wheel route out of the backfield. Then we got Peyton Rutherford. So we still have some guys, but I don't think anybody that we have left is as good as Infante. But I would take our quarterback. I'd take our receivers. We do have our all-American back left tackle, so that's good. Defenses are, like Connor said, they're comparable. Maybe it's a homer pick. I'll still take our defense. But I think if they play each other, where that game's played is going to make a big deal.
Yeah, it could be in Frisco. We'll have to see, as long as Montana State can win out. All right, boys. So here we go. Is Montana back to early season form with Cam Humphrey back in the lineup? Seth Meyer wants to know this. You betcha, Seth. Matt Frazee called Montana. Semifinal minimum. Montana is back, baby. They're back. Just like Nebraska or Texas or whoever it was. No, I really think Cam Humphrey, to echo Kyler, that is a huge injury. They are clearly not the same team. Kyler said many times, when you put those backup QBs in, that's just, it's, you might as well start running backs, because Cam Humphrey makes a big difference. So I think Montana has a really good chance to beat Montana State at home at the end and get themselves into the playoffs. Kyler disagrees there, but I think they do have a shot here, especially with their leader at the helm. Anytime you lose your starting quarterback, it's not going to be easy. So, Garth wants to know, man, we keep getting this question because people love you. Does Jamie stay on the podcast when James Madison's in the Sun Belt? He says you flipping better. And if not, who's the new FCS big guy? So I don't even think he's referring to your stature. I think he's referring to your brain, because you know more names and stats than anybody else. So you've already said it before, but one final time, and I'll never ask this question again. Your plan with the podcast, Jamie?
If you guys all have me, I don't plan on leaving that fast. You know, it would be easy for me to just say Virginia Military Institute, because that's what I've been saying, but I'm going to take a different stature and say, recruit me, boys.
Ooh.
We're doing a full.
Yeah, we're going to do it. We talked about it on Friday.
Oh,
yeah. Recruit me. Send me gear. I'll gladly accept it. DM for the information. I'll wear it on the podcast. Throw the recruiting, and I'll pick a new team at some point. After Frisco, though.
This is phenomenal. Yeah, well, okay. Well, we'll have a recruitment episode for Jamie Williams. We'll live stream it.
Chris and Kyler decided on Friday that it was too easy for me to just pick another team, and that it had to be a recruitment battle. So, we'll put that somehow. Maybe we'll put some hats out if people send stuff. I do already have an Eastern Washington hat, Idaho shirt, Sam Houston shirt. So are those three teams in the lead? Maybe. Don't send me any CAA team crap. Screw the CAA. So just get that out of there. And don't send me nothing Youngstown State. Don't send me nothing Montana. Everybody else, bring it on.
Hashtag respect my decision. That will be a ton of fun. Here we go. I love it. Kyler here, man. Ben Schlieger wants to know, Dylan McCaffrey has been a huge bust at the FCS level. Who else has failed and has failed their expectations when they've been a high-end NFL coach guy who's come in? I couldn't really find anything or think of anything. Could you think of anybody here who else has also busted besides Nick Saban in Miami?
Yeah, no. I was actually trying to do research on like which big transfers maybe fell apart. And you know, the easy ones like Zarek Cooper, who just hasn't lived up to the hype. Zeb Nolan. But he's actually doing pretty well over there in the East, right? So maybe it was just North Dakota State.
Maybe it was the offensive play calling. You never know.
But let's just talk a little bit about Northern Colorado. Yeah. Dylan McCaffrey, he does not look good at this level. I think the other bust you could just say is the whole McCaffrey system. Right now, it's not paying off. I, whenever you see that coach and then the brother who's the OC or DC, and then you're seeing him, they look like deer in the headlights when they're playing or when they're coaching, when they're play calling. I don't think they expected this coming from high school. I thought they said, we have Dylan McCaffrey. We're going to be able to do a lot of things here. They just do not look prepared at all. Which Northern Colorado is a pretty tough schedule, but I don't see too many other ones, that like just did a drop down and, no, yeah, quarterback Dylan McCaffrey does not look good. I don't know any other transfers who have looked not that great.
Gage Maloney.
Yeah, he's not even playing.
Can't even start.
Here, we can say Quincy Patterson. I mean, there we go. We can say Quincy Patterson. He hasn't lived up to the hype. He just got benched by a little dude called Cam Miller who's playing pretty well.
Yeah, it's sometimes, you know, what one of my good buddy Micah, he says an FBS player who transfers down is, what do you call him? An FCS player. So doesn't mean you're better just because you initially got the offer. So, all right, guys, does all the chaos in the Valley hurt the strength of schedule for its team? Mr. Dustin Perman wants to know. I don't know if it hurts the strength of schedule per se, because the strength of schedule with Massey and others helps these teams out. You guys have said, like, as soon as you play a team, suddenly your strength of schedule could go up or it could go down. I don't think it tears you up as much in terms of being such a respected in a bigger conference. Am I off on that, Jamie? Or I think that chaos, I don't think chaos matters as much in the Missouri Valley as it would elsewhere where people will lose those at-large bids, right?
Exactly. And the only teams it matters for in the Valley are those last two bubble pick teams that are they or aren't they going to get in, you know, this year, like a South Dakota, like we talked about earlier. But strength of schedule does hurt when you start beating yourself up in the Southern Conference. And, you know, VMI is a good example of that. Two conference losses, that's all they have in the FCS this year. Usually you think that's pretty good shape, but one of them was to the Citadel. If that's Furman and East Tennessee State, they're still in the bubble. And, you know, so, you know, losing that strength of schedule there, that matters in a smaller conference that's got that's a two, maybe three bid conference. But in the Valley, only that, you know, the sixth place team, basically.
Yeah, that you're the sixth place team, you're in a lot of trouble. So, speaking of the Valley guys, Bruce Edmiston says, as Jacksonville State leaves the FCS with a 2-1 all time record versus NDSU, all time, will the Gamecocks need to pay the Bison to get another matchup? Ooh, boy. I remember in 1977 on December 3rd when we lost 31-7. There to Jacksonville State. Not as
I wasn't even alive then.
Oh my goodness. Well, okay. In 1989, in November 25th, when I was 10 months old, it crushed me when we lost 21-17. Like that was just crushing, you know? So got my revenge there in our national championship against them. But I kid, of course, I only saw one matchup. But for you, Bruce, yeah, you're CUSA and FBS. You got to pay us $600,000 to come beat you there in they're in Alabama. So that's how it works. But I assume Jacksonville State will operate like all other non-Power 5 schools, and there's not a chance in heck you're going to schedule NDSU. So go schedule the Mercers and the others of the world, I would assume. Final one here, Jamie, I'm going to give you the floor. Thoughts on how much of a black eye the CAA may or may not have given themselves when it comes to keeping current schools and or expansion on the table, since they are not allowing James Madison athletes to compete for conference championships now that they have officially announced a move to the Sun Belt. Mr. Richard Dean wants to know this answer. Our final question here in the quick hits, you have the floor about the CAA, my man.
I reserve the right to be a homer. I'm going to say that now before I start talking. But I'll answer kind of straight down the middle to start. Did the CAA give themselves a black eye? Not necessarily, because if you're entering the CAA, that's going to look at it and say, huh, they do take care of their own. If somebody doesn't want to be here, they handle the business with everybody else. Now, it's an antiquated rule. It's the only conference that has it, but it is still a rule. Jonathan Alger and Jeff Bourne played it perfectly because the blood's on the CAA hands and not the schools. Maybe it should be, but no, put it on the CAA. I know a couple of those presidents voted for us. It was cool yesterday at the game. Right before the game, the football team came out. All the other athletes from the Olympic sports were on the field, lined the sideline. The football team joined them, and it was Athletes Unite. That's the hashtag. Hashtag Athletes Unite. Let them play. Antiquated rules, you know, with things that have occurred in the world the last couple of years, you know, things are different than what they were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But so I wish we could play in these championships. I get it. It sucks, but let them play.
Yeah, it's
screw the CAA.
It's brutal for the athletes. Kyler and I, Jamie, and some others, you know, we understand it is a rule. And we understand that James Madison as well voted for this rule. And there's other things in the past. There's no reason to go down into it. It just sucks for the athletes, for sure. No matter what. We can debate all day about laws and all those other things. But everybody in this podcast feels bad for those young men and women who are going to get SOL'd out of putting a lot of effort in. So happy for James Madison as a whole. Sad for those folks. So we hope they do well in the Sun Belt. And yeah, okay, bias buys an admin. Screw the CAA. There you go. I can say it, and everybody's happy about it. All right, guys. Thank you so much for those quick hit questions, the big questions. Thank you to all the fans who submitted them. And it's time now, guys, to get into an outstanding, and hopefully what Kyler will agree with, our game of the week.
This is the matchup you should be paying attention to. This is the FCS Fans Nation Game of the Week.
All right, guys. Game of the week, number 5, Eastern Washington, 7-2 at number 8, UC Davis, 8-1. Disclaimer, we are recording this on November 7th, 2021, so that ranking is subject to change. I would venture to guess, honestly, it's probably swapped. You'll probably see number 8, Eastern Washington, at number 5, UC Davis. It could just flip-flop around or something roughly around there. So what do we got, guys? Eastern Washington fighting to maintain that seed stuff. UC Davis fighting for maybe a very high-end seed. So this is kind of a seed battle. So we will start that out. I'm on a roll, boys. I picked SDSU. I picked SI or UNI. So I'm going to go last since I'm such a hot streak with these picks. And we'll let our faithful leader, Kyler, go first, who is in first place for the pick'em for the year. Kyler, your Eagles at UC Davis. What do you think?
Well, you know, the big sky doesn't play defense, right? Well, right now, UC Davis is a top 10 scoring defense. This is the third time in the Big Sky. Eastern's already played a top 10. The Big Sky has the three best, like, for conferences. There's only one conference that has three teams in scoring defense in the nation out of one conference, and it's the Big Sky with Montana, Montana State, and UC Davis. So that big fluffy, you can't really say it anymore. There's defense being played. Eastern Washington is the last of a dying breed in the Big Sky. But here's the kicker. UC Davis is playing extremely good defense, only allowing about 16 points per game. The one thing that they have different than a Montana State and a Weber State, their passing defense is not top 3 in the nation. They're not top 10 in the nation. They're closer to a Montana where they're going to stop the run. They're going to blitz you. They're going to hold you out of the red zone, but they're not an elite passing defense. I think that's where Eastern Washington finally can exploit some things that they haven't been able to do the last 2 weeks. So even though UC Davis is a top 10 scoring defense in the nation, I think this is one of those actual style matchups that I prefer for Eastern Washington. So I think Eastern Washington is going to win, and I think it's going to be one of those 34 to 24 point games.
Kyler goes with Eastern Washington. Current standings, Kyler 7-4 in the year, Matt 6-5, Jamie 4-7. Time for a comeback, Jamie. What do you got, my man, Eastern or UC Davis?
Well, I'm kind of a kiss of death here this year. I got started as a kiss of death in the spring, but I got on a roll. I don't think I'm getting on a roll this year, but I'm going to try to start here this week. I just don't see Eric Berry having another bad game against a good defense. I think he'll play with a chip on his shoulder. I'm going to take the Eagles on the road to play a little pressure-free and win 31-27 in a close one.
31-27 to the Eagles. I'm on a hot streak. I put a comment on your guys' Friday night stream. I said, no way, VMI, ain't no way they're going to beat ETSU. I was just dropping predictions left and right. So don't worry, Kyler. I'm not going to get any closer to you here. We're either going to fail together or win together. I also do not believe that UC Davis, especially with their ugly loss, I'm not going to overlook it. I think Eastern Washington is going to go in there and get that victory. So I will take Eastern Washington to win this game. I will give them 38 points, and I will give UC Davis 24. So 38-24, Eagles with the victory.
Fun fact, I think UC Davis is like 0-9 versus Eagles in history. So they're prime for an upset. They're prime for a win, right? You don't go that whole time without eventually getting a win. So we'll see.
It will be very interesting to see how it plays out. And speaking of interesting, make sure you guys tune in next week. I'm telling you, heck, we may even live stream it. More details to come, but it is going to be the mock committee's playoff bracket. Us three are going to break it down. We will seed your team. We'll put you in the playoffs, or we'll ruin your dreams. So that is going to be our episode next week. And of course, what happens this week will assist us with how all of that plays out. So make sure you subscribe to the FCS Fans Nation podcast, which is what you're listening to now, Apple, Google, all those places, and like our pages across the social media platforms. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me as always on this beautiful Sunday evening. Look forward to another outstanding week of FCS football, and T-minus tick, tick, tick. Here we come, playoffs. Thanks for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. Have a great night. Catch you on the next one. Boom.
Thank you for listening to the FCS Fans Nation podcast. Make sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on your preferred listening platform, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Google, or even YouTube. And make sure to follow our FCS Fans Nation social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you for listening to the premier podcast for FCS football. Boom.
I'm pretty sure this is the Matrix and Tom Brady is just a glitch.